no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Saturday morning, we're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. I'm with Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend from the Associated Press. He covers the NHL. Stephen Wino joins us on the show. Stephen, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Great to see you guys, too.
Yes, Stephen, obviously brought you on to talk about the NHL. We're into the final, you know, for some teams, half dozen games. For some teams, I think the Canucks still have a solid 34 games left in their regular season, something like that. But, you know, Stephen, here in Winnipeg, I'm not sure if you're aware, I would assume you are, we're mired, the Jets are mired in a six-game losing streak where nothing has gone right for the team right now. You know, how important do you think that the playoff seeding in the North Division is this year as opposed to in a quote-unquote regular season?
I think it matters particularly for the Jets and the Oilers to avoid the Maple Leafs in the first round. I think as long as – because you don't have fans in these arenas unless these teams move to an Arizona, Nashville for the first couple of rounds. You're not going to have any kind of home ice advantage outside of the last line change. That I think for these teams, it's avoid that fourth spot. And the Jets are dangerously close if the Canadians catch fire, that the Jets slip into that fourth spot. You don't want to, you know, you're going to have to go through the Maple Leafs likely to get through to the third round. But I think the key is you want to set up that matchup with the Oilers, a beatable team, not a team that is a pushover, but certainly you don't want to play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round of the playoffs.
Stephen, we obviously want to talk to you about the Washington Capitals, you know, a team that you cover. And I mean, you cover the entire NHL, but, you know, the Capitals and the Penguins, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know how you feel about the season. We've talked about it a lot on this show, but, you know, covering the Jets in the North Division, we kind of forget that there's, you know, a whole other league out there. And, you know, I've obviously watched some Capitals and watched some Penguins this year, but, you know, when you consider that they're duking it out for first place in the East Division right now, and obviously the Capitals were expected, you know, to be one of the top teams in the East Division, but the Penguins weren't. Like, what are you seeing from these two teams? Because to me, it looks like these teams are on a collision course to face each other, you know, to get into the Eastern Conference Final.
It does feel like one of those years, right? Like, it feels like another Ovi, Sid, Malkin kind of, like, you're going to have one of those classic series between these teams. And that, look, anybody can come out of the East. But yeah, it does seem like that. And I was never more wrong this season about any team than the Pittsburgh Penguins. I thought they had gotten old. I thought that this was a team that had traded Matt Murray away and didn't have the goaltending. And I was completely wrong. And this is a team, starting with Jim Rutherford and what he built and what Ron Hextall and Brian Burke have done since then, that this is a really good team. This is a team that can go to a Stanley Cup final again, even with Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith as the goaltenders. And the Capitals, I don't know what to expect. I go into this year every year, basically from like 2014 to 2018, saying really good coach. They've got a solid team. They've got Alex Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, Evgeny Kuznetsov, but the goaltending is a question mark now. And maybe for the first time since 2012, when Braden Holtby was a rookie, you don't know what you're going to get from the goaltending with the Washington Capitals, with Ilya Samsonov or Vitek Vanacek. That's the biggest question. And honestly, if you're the Capitals, you probably want to play the Penguins, given that the Islanders could give the Capitals fits in the playoffs. You probably want to play the Bruins more than anybody else. But this is going to be a dogfight between these four teams. Throw the Islanders and the Bruins into the mix just to get out of the East.
Stephen Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. We are watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
You know, Stephen, I can't believe it's already the third question. Nobody mentioned it's racing day. It's first Saturday in May. You're a big racing guy. And so, of course, before I get into the hockey question, what's your pick for the Kentucky Derby?
Look, I think Essential Quality is going to win the race. He's the best horse in the race. But I'll give you guys a long shot pick. There's a horse named Brooklyn Strong, the number three horse in this field, who was the last horse to get in, hasn't won a race since December, but has all the makings of a horse who could just blow up your Derby card. I would throw him into exotic. It's exactas, trifectas, superfectas, if you're so inclined. Essential Quality, I think, is the best horse in the race. There's horses like Rock Your World, Known Agenda, who could make a run for it. But I think Essential Quality becomes the first grade to win the Kentucky Derby since Giacomo in 2005.
Nice. Okay, good. Now back to hockey. Now, Steven, the one thing I'm wondering, and I'm not sure what your thoughts are on this, which is why I'm going to ask the question. How much of a factor do you think fans being in the buildings will play? Because, of course, like you said, here in the North Division, that's not something we're expecting to see. They were planning for it, but because of the way the rollout has gone, it's not likely to happen. But how much of an advantage could that play for a team like that are playing to higher capacities? Because we know what a boost it is emotionally for the players to be playing in front of teams.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an uneven home ice advantage. It'll be uneven, certainly. And just knowing that a team like St. Louis could have 50% capacity, or Tampa Bay or Florida, that's where it becomes an issue. Whereas Washington is going to have 10% capacity, the Islanders at maybe a 15, 20%. The unevenness is going to be a thing I think players are going to be concerned about. And the Capitals only had their first game with fans earlier this week and said it does make a huge difference. As Tom Wilson said, it feels like your first NHL game. Even 2,000 fans makes a huge difference up from zero. But yeah, when you have this happened in the NFL playoffs, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a chance during most of the season to play in front of half full stadiums. They went on the road and won games, but it certainly was an uneven amount of noise, particularly in an NFL game, but certainly in the NHL, to have an uneven of kind of roar of the crowd and the things we expect. And it's going to be interesting to see how much that affects the playoffs. I think it's going to affect it a little bit. It might be the difference of momentum in one game, and it might be the difference in a series.
Steven Wino's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the NHL with Steven, a little bit of horse racing too, as Steven's a big horse racing guy. It is the Kentucky Derby Day for Saturday in May, of course. Steven, you talk about the playoffs and you talk about home ice advantage, and we frankly don't know where the North Division playoffs are going to occur. Looks like we actually may have just dropped Steven off. It looks like Steven's internet may have cut out.
He's off to the races.
He's off to the races, exactly. He's had enough of us, and frankly, I can't blame him for that. We are, most people usually can handle us in very small doses, but it is there you go. Okay, Dave, explain the photo.
Okay, well, I mean, we're doing some horse racing talk while we wait. This is the first ever horse that the Minuke family was Avenging Bullet. I actually missed the game because I was at a softball game, which was annoying, but our family was lucky enough to have the back end of number of horses at the Ascent went down, so got in the winner's circle a few times.
There you go, Dave Minuke, horse racing, your horse country there. Yeah, exactly, Dave. Steven Wino is back. Steven, good to see you again. I was going to say, it's bizarre we're sitting here with, half a dozen games to go in the regular season, and we really don't know where the North Division playoffs are going to happen. How much of a factor do you think that is? Do you think, it's clear that the conference finals are going to probably happen in the United States, but is it weird to you that the North Division still doesn't know if they're going to head down south to play the semifinals and then the division finals?
Look, if this weren't a pandemic, it'd be weird to me, but the NHL waited so long to pick the sites for their play last year. And remember, made the right choices with Toronto and Edmonton, given the cases of COVID in those cities at that time. And so the league wants to wait the longest possible time to figure this out. And I think that's okay. I think it's right to say, we're going to figure this out based on the situations across Canada right now. We don't know if the restrictions are going to be province to province travel-wise in the coming weeks. And I think the league's going to wait to the last possible moment, but possibly even the end of next week, to decide this. I think ultimately it's going to wind up being in empty arenas in Canada for the first two rounds, and then the semifinals and final in the United States. But I think that's the plan that I expect to happen. What I would suggest, honestly, is you get everybody into the U.S., you vaccinate everybody, let them practice, take day off practice and play. And then I think you can have certainly a more normal pace of the playoffs from there.
Yeah, Steven, I think we would all agree that probably makes the most sense at this point. And, hopefully we can ask you one or two more questions here. Just wanted to go back to the Capitals and Penguins. Obviously a huge game tonight. John Carlson and Ovechkin have been out of the lineup recently. Is there any update? Are we expecting, at the very least, Carlson back? And is there any concern that, these injuries might keep either of these players out maybe, longer term than originally thought?
Looks like no John Carlson and no Alex Ovechkin for a second consecutive game. I'd be concerned about it on the Ovechkin side because he doesn't miss games games like this. He doesn't miss consecutive games. He hasn't missed more than three in a row since 2009. I started covering this team in 2011, and he's never missed this many games in a row because of injury. I do think the Capitals are playing it very safe right now, and Alex Ovechkin plays through a lot. But the Capitals have lost playoff series, not because Alex Ovechkin has not performed, but because he's not 100%. He's playing 40% or 50% healthy. And I think that's a situation that the Capitals are trying to avoid by letting him rest right now. I do think it's a major concern if he has a lingering groin or a hamstring problem that's going to affect him come playoff time. But I think the Capitals are going to play super and we don't care about playoff seeding. We just want to get Alex Ovechkin healthy.
Steven Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. He's a big horse racing guy, and he's a big Jacksonville Jaguars fan, the only Jaguars fan I know. So I'm sure that you're happy, Steven, about the addition of Trevor Lawrence as the latest quarterback savior of your favorite NFL franchise.
He is, and everyone keeps asking me wherever I go, do you like the pick? Are you satisfied with the pick? How could I not be? he's the savior of the organization, and the draft the other night was a top 10 moment in the franchise.
There you go. Steven Wino covers hockey, covers horse racing, he covers football. What can't he do? Steven, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. There he goes, Steven Wino from the Associated Press joining us on the Illegal
Curve. Was that horseshoe clopping that I heard there?
It did sound very much like some horses going on in the background.
I don't think Steven's in Kentucky. He might be. I assume he's in the D.C. area. But, it's a big day. I know, Drew, that you're pumped up. Your family's pumped up with the Kentucky connection. So shout out to Laura, and it's going to be fun to watch today.
We will be playing my old Kentucky home, and I will be having some bourbon in the middle of the afternoon. So it's a very day-drinking kind of Saturday for yours truly. So good luck to my kids.
Which one of those is Waggles, Dave?
Waggles is here too. Hold on. Oh, yeah. Waggles.
There's Waggles.
I'm glad you brought out a picture and not a big bottle of glue, because that would have been really awkward at that point.
No, Waggles actually was – Waggles. I believe Waggles was in the running to be – like you, Drew, the oldest horse of the winning of the older horse of the year. So Waggles was a good horse for us.
And Waggles' mutter was a mutter.
Yeah, he was like the distances. Loved the slop.
All righty, let's talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. Saturday morning, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. This segment like we should brought be having to
Eddie O. Sorry, Drew. I was just going to say, I feel like Eddie O should be on the show right now.
Well, Eddie O will be on the NBC coverage of the Kentucky Derby. Eddie O is certainly a big horse racing guy. Remember when we had him on the show last time when he was in town to promote his book? He told us that great story about he was a regular with our friends at Assiniboia Downs and all of this, or where he got the horse racing buzz at that point of time was his time here in Winnipeg as a player. As I was mentioning, this segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Drew, I know you want to get back to the Jets here, but like, can we talk about Trevor Lawrence's flow? Like, that flow is, it's next to none. Like, it's incredible. It's like Fabio hair. Is it not?
I mean, he's got some nice hair. Yeah. I'm honestly a little surprised you knew that, as you're not a huge football guy. So,
well, I mean, I follow it a little bit, and I follow the first round more so than, the other rounds, but I just like that hair is incredible. I didn't know anything about him before the draft, but I mean, that's, it looks like more like a surfer.
Well, if there's anybody who knows anything about hair on this show between the three of us, it's clearly you, because that ship has sailed for me, and Dave always wears a hat. So really, between your hair on top and your hair on your face, Ezzy, which apparently won't be there on Monday night's post-game show, but time will tell with that factor. Getting back to the Winnipeg Jets, we know that, despite the losing streak, it is still more than likely that the Jets are going to face off with Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers in that first round of the playoffs. McDavid, we know what he did against the Jets this year is remarkable. It was, out of this world. It should be, frankly, a little bit embarrassing to the Jets players and the Jets franchise. 22 points in 9 games played against the Jets. He did not have fewer than 2 points per game against the Jets at all this year. So let me ask you guys this. How do the Jets come playoff time? mitigate or slow down Connor McDavid? What approach do they take? What matchup do they take? Where, because they haven't been able to do it at all this season. And frankly, if they can't find a solution to doing so, just even mitigating his impact, then it's going to be a very quick playoff series for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and you know, he is the one player that you don't ever expect to fully shut down, right, guys? Like, he gets a couple points every game. It's really incredible. I think when we look back at this season, I think Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, the way that they have performed in the shortened season is really going to stand out almost as much as who wins the Stanley Cup, really, right? Like, Matthews with a chance to hit 40 goals and McDavid with a really good chance to hit 100 points, right? Like, it's really ridiculous. It's absurd almost. You know, but these guys are generational talents, right, Dave? Like, when we were covering the drafts in Florida and Buffalo back in 2015-16, this is what scouts thought was going to happen 5-6 years later, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you have to be as close to mistake-free as possible, right, Drew? And, you know, we've seen the Jets turn the puck over against the Oilers, and that has led directly to goals against Connor McDavid. So your defensive coverage, you know, has to be on. It has to be. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it's got to be, you know, excellent. It's got to be great. And, you know, I really do think, you know, having Adam Lowry in the lineup is crucial. Because, you know, we've seen Mark Scheifele's line, whoever is on that line, but let's assume that it's, you know, Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, or Scheifele, Ehlers, and Wheeler. We've seen McDavid's line dominate the Scheifele line. So it's going to be, you know, whatever line Pierre-Luc Dubois is on, or it's going to be Adam Lowry's line. But I certainly like Lowry, Kopp, and Appleton. But, you know, you've just got to be, you have to be playing at a high level, because McDavid, and I said this before, like, and I think you guys would agree with this, what McDavid is doing individually is what Gretzky was doing in the 80s. It really is. And I've said this to you guys before. I think by the time his career's done, I think McDavid is going to be, you know, in that conversation. It's going to be Gretzky, McDavid, and Crosby. Like, who's the best player of all time? And obviously it's Gretzky, but those guys aren't far behind. If you look at what they've already done, you know, in their careers. So You have to be sharp. You can't turn the puck over. And, you know, I think you have to combat McDavid with speed. And that's why I've always said the only guy that can really match him is Nikolaj Ehlers. You obviously don't have him now, but in the playoffs, I think Ehlers is going to be, for me, the most important guy on this Jets team.
So now who would Ehlers be playing with in that example? I mean, I agree that it
Dubois, can probably Dubois. I mean, I like what Dubois and Ehlers have done together. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, and then, you know, does that mean it's going to be Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler? Probably. I mean, all things being equal, I think that's probably, you know, what you're going with. And, you know, does that mean Andrew Kopp is on that second line, or is it Paul Stastny? I would probably at this point go with Stastny, because I really like Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton together. But I would probably say, just if you're looking at pairs, Drew, I would probably pair Ehlers with Dubois.
Does Paul Maurice understand and or accept that Mark Scheifele cannot handle Connor McDavid, Dave? Because we keep seeing that matchup. We keep seeing Scheifele get that matchup against McDavid. We keep seeing Scheifele get that matchup against Austin Matthews. And we know Scheifele's shortcomings defensively.
Yeah.
Yet Maurice continues to go with that. Does he understand? Does he accept that you're playing into the opponent's hand if you continue to do so?
Ask me in a month.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, I mean, like, no, because Drew, right now, it would be clearly no. I mean, obviously, he's trying to see what. I mean, look, I guess the one thing Paul Maurice has been afforded based on the way the Jets have played earlier in the season is the ability to tinker and the ability to test things out and the ability to say, okay, does this work? Does this not work? And so to me, you can take a look at what Mark Scheifele is able to do against Austin Matthews or against Connor McDavid or Pierre-Luc Dubois against those guys. And then you can evaluate it as a group. And the point, I think the key will be, what does he do in a playoff series? How does he make adjustments? Because that's kind of the knock, right? Does his coach adjust enough in game? Not necessarily, but from, I think we got more than 26 likes, but I appreciate the sentiment from Timmerman. But the point is, I think it's one of those situations where you just have to see what is he going to do when it comes to, you know, that sort of matchup. And especially because, again, Dave Tippett is a very good coach when it comes to getting what he wants out there when he wants it. And so, do you go hard matching? Do you just you again have this collective team effort to say, listen, we've got, you know, five, when 97 is on the ice, you know, that's your job. That's it. And, you know, and that's the other thing. People are saying make his life miserable. Now, of course, folks are going to want to remember there was a guy named with number 99 in Edmonton who made life hell for the Jets 1.0 when regardless of what they were trying to game plan for him, it was very difficult. And he, you know, but that was a much more skilled Edmonton team, right? If you were able to contain Wayne Gretzky, well, maybe you weren't containing Mark Messier. Well, if you were containing Mark Messier and Wayne Gretzky, well, they had the guy named Jari Kurri or Glenn Anderson, or the list goes on and on and on and on and on. That was a more talented Edmonton team. And now the other thing that we have to factor in is Mike Smith has been excellent. Mike Smith has been rejuvenated this year, and he's looked great. And the Edmonton defense has seemed to. It's ironic, right? Like, it, and it's interesting. We were talking about, someone was talking about it before, the idea that Montreal beats Edmonton, Edmonton beats Winnipeg, and Winnipeg can beat Montreal. Like, it's just kind of like three-headed tiger constantly chasing its tail, whatever. And so you have to kind of, that's what I'd be interested to do, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. But it'd be interesting to see what teams have had been successful in shutting down Connor McDavid. The answer, based on the way he's projecting, and to Ezzy's point, haven't been many. But what have those teams been able to do to implement against the Oilers? You know, the Flames just did it. Like, the Oilers looked unbeatable, even though the Jets played them better in that second game of the series. And then they go, and then Edmonton goes to play Calgary, and they lose 3-1. So what were the Flames able to do to turn things around? Because the Flames aren't a particularly good team, right? They haven't. No. It's not like things are going well in Calgary right now. So if a Calgary team can beat an Edmonton team that looks unbeatable to Winnipeg, but yet the Jets have success against Calgary, what did Calgary do to neutralize Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl to win that game?
You have to keep, quite simply, guys. Like, obviously, you know, I'm not going to give you all the answers in the most articulate way here, but at the basic level, you have to keep the puck off of his stick, right? Like, and limit his speed. Mm-hmm. We have all watched McDavid many times, and we all know what he can do. Sometimes it's like a wizard. It's like he's been called the cheat mode, right? Mm-hmm. And so we know that, like, if you're going up in a one-on-one situation, like, look how many times the Morrissey-Pullman pair, Dave, has gone up against the McDavid line. Like, it's not all just forward line versus forward line.
Yep.
Like, McDavid has beat, you know, both Morrissey and Pullman pretty badly. And I'm not singling those guys out because they're both good defensemen. But at the very base level, you're going to have to limit what he's really good at. And that's obviously a lot of things, but the number one thing is speed. And, you know, so you have to play him tight. You have to try to take away his speed. But again, you almost expect McDavid to get 1 or 2 points. And there aren't that many players in the league where you expect them to get 1 or 2 points because they're that good, right? Like, there's a handful of guys. You know, we're talking about, you know, the Sidney Crosbys, the Austin Matthews, you know, I guess, you know, you'd throw in maybe a Brad Marchand, right, Dave? Like, there are so many, there are only, let's say, 5, 6, maybe 10 guys that are that good. I wouldn't even put that many guys in the McDavid category. So you have to, again, you have to try to limit what he's good at because you're never going to completely stop him. But it is going to start with what matchup you're able to get. So if you're in Edmonton, you're not going to have the last change. So you're going to try to get Dubois' line. You're going to try to get Lowry's line up against McDavid. But you, I think, have to look at reuniting Dylan DeMello and Josh Morrissey as your top pair because you've had Morrissey and Pullman together for the majority of the year, and you've lost to Edmonton 6 times.
Seven. Your point is well taken. Yeah. I mean, you look at McDavid's numbers, and so McDavid has 84 points on the year. Of those 84 points, 43 of those points have come against the Jets and the Senators. So the vast majority of his points have come basically in, you know, 17 or 18 games. The other games he's been, certainly hasn't been shut down, but he's been neutralized more. He has not been as dominant. So whatever the Jets have been doing clearly isn't working. And you can't just send it back out the same strategy and the same approach, you know, that you've done during the 9 regulation games, because, you know, it's asking, you know, what the definition of insanity, like we've talked about, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. If the Jets don't change their approach to Connor McDavid for the start of the playoffs, then why would anyone think that he's not going to be able to be as dominant as he has been during the regular season? I mean,
and you have to look. Drew, yeah, sorry. I was just going to say the other thing too is, there are other players on the Oilers that have been hurting the Jets in the season series. Alex Chason has been a factor against the Jets. Leon Draisaitl has been a factor. Kaylor Yamamoto. Like, I agree that you have to shut down the best player in the world right now.
Yeah. Look,
Darnell Nurse? Nurse is quietly in the Norris conversation. I don't think he's going to win the Norris. Shout out to Adam Fox. But I think that, you know, when you talk about this Oilers team, that's like we talked to Steven Wino about the Penguins. And I didn't pick the Oilers to make the playoffs. Like, I had them finishing fifth, and I had Vancouver. So you guys can make fun of me for that pick, even though I did pick Rod Brind'Amour to be coach of the year, and I think he has a good chance at winning coach of the year. So, you know, I'm right once out of every 7 years. But, you know, you have other players on this team to worry about. I didn't even mention Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who happens to be a pretty good player as well.
If you neutralize McDavid and you get beat by the other guys, then, you know, so be it.
I agree.
But, yeah. You know,
I know what you're saying.
You haven't stopped McDavid, so it doesn't matter. But the other guys, you know, it doesn't matter. If you can't stop McDavid, you know, saying, hey, I shut down Darnell Nurse or I shut down Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, well, that's great. McDavid still got, you know, 3 points a game, and the Oilers still kicked your ass.
I think one of the keys, though, for this Jets team is the word discipline. I think that, you know, we've seen what the Oilers have been able to do against them on the power play, and I think that's one of the keys for this Jets team is you just can't take those you know, stick penalties, the high sticking, the tripping, that sort of casualness with your stick. Again, it's a collective effort, and that's when I think we're kind of getting, you know, repeating it over and over again. True, you say you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again expecting a different result. Well, they've been icing the same lineup, so perhaps they don't necessarily agree with you, those that make the decisions. But again, I think it really is going to be incumbent on them to watch their tape and figure out what, to your point, Drew, you know, that's 50% of your points against two teams.
Yeah.
Well, then there's another three teams that you're not achieving that many points against. You're still doing well. You're still having success against them.
Yeah.
But you're not to the same degree. So what
is he? I was going to say he's still a point a game player against the other four teams.
Of course, But he's not a 2 point a play game player.
There's lots of players in the NHL who are point a game players. So you have to, I believe, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, and it's not as simple as replicating what other teams do. But I do think you have to look at the approach Toronto's taking and the approach Calgary's taking, and Vancouver and Montreal are taking, and say, what can we steal from them? You know, what hybrid approach can we take, stealing a little bit from Calgary and a little bit from Montreal and a little bit from Vancouver, and saying, okay, combine all that, take something from our team as well, and this is our new approach. But game in, game out, doing the same thing you've done for 9 regulation games that led to him getting, 23 points in those 9 games. I mean, you can't just do it again and say, okay, Scheifele, now you're going to get him. Because
I think the question has to be asked, though. Are the Jets, or it just has to be said, are the Jets just not good enough defensively to handle McDavid, right? Like personnel-wise, that has to be asked.
It's not like the Vancouver Canucks are a defensive juggernaut or anything.
Drew, you're talking about how do the Jets strategize, and what system can they put in place to limit Connor McDavid? What I'm saying is it might be that, and also, do the Jets have the personnel
to
get the job done? That's what I'm saying.
I mean, no question that the Jets defense, you know, is not great, but the Jets are also in a playoff position. So you can't just say, well, our defense wasn't good enough, we didn't make the playoffs, and Connor McDavid killed us. You have to figure out a way, you know, with the playoffs, you know, 6 games away, you have to figure out a way and to try and neutralize him, because I haven't seen the Jets do anything different really in their approach in those 9 games against the Oilers. So that's why for game 1 of the playoffs, you better be rolling out a different strategy rather than just going head to head, Scheifele against McDavid, may the better man win. Well, the better man, by the way, his name is Connor McDavid. It's not Mark Scheifele.
And the only thing I was going to add, Drew, is if Montreal beats Ottawa tonight, then Montreal is 2 points back. So I wouldn't necessarily, I would write it in pencil, not pen, that the Jets are playing the Oilers in the first round, because Montreal would be 2 points back if they win tonight with the same number of games played as the Winnipeg Jets, with the same number of games remaining in the season. So it wouldn't necessarily be a foregone conclusion.
Well, then just insert Austin Matthews for Connor McDavid then, Dave.
Well, like, I mean, to be honest with you, I would rather face Austin Matthews than Connor McDavid. I think Connor McDavid is, and you know, to be honest with you, with the Toronto goaltending situation, the way Mike Smith is playing, I'm not so sure you wouldn't rather face whomever is in net in Toronto versus Mike's rejuvenated Mike Smith and an Edmonton team that seems to be playing a little bit better hockey. So all I'm saying is I wouldn't necessarily write those pairs in stone. The Oilers, I think, I can't remember where they are in terms of points. They're at 60. So they're three ahead of the Jets with two games in hand. So the Oilers, I mean, the Oilers are most likely not going to catch Toronto, who have a nine-point lead on them. But again, I just don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the Jets are playing the Oilers at this point in the playoffs. Again, I'm of the opinion that the four teams are the Leafs, the Oilers, the Habs, and the Jets. I don't think Calgary is going to be able to do it because they've been too inconsistent. But I just think I wouldn't be so quick to suggest that it's going to be an Edmonton-Winnipeg series. And to be honest with you, I'm not so sure that's necessarily a bad thing based on the way that the Jets have seemed to have played better against the Leafs this season than against the Oilers. So, and again, with the Toronto goaltending situation not yet set, you know, maybe there's something there. Plus, to be honest with you,
Dave, you're talking about the first place team in the division.
No, but
the Leafs have defeated the Jets more times than defeated the Leafs.
Well, yeah, but they've less signs.
Has it been 7-2 like it was Edmonton?
That's right.
Let's not get carried away here. The Jets have been great against Toronto.
It doesn't make a difference. I'm not suggesting the Jets are favorites. I'm saying they've played Toronto better than they've played Edmonton. And I think speak for everyone when they say, who doesn't want to see Nikolai Ehlers versus Joe Thornton in a playoff series? I think everybody wants to see that.
A valid point nonetheless there, Mr. Minook. I mean, I keep going back to the defense now. When you consider the Jets' defense, and we've talked about it really throughout the show and the postgame show in the last number of weeks, why not, if Dylan DeMello is your safety blanket and is your security blanket for the Jets on the back end, why not try Dylan DeMello with a Ville Heinola for a while, starting Monday in Ottawa, just to see what you have? Because Paul Maurice obviously considers he likes to play DeMello with, I'm going to say, the defenseman he has the least amount of confidence in. And that's why DeMello has been stuck in a third pairing role all season long.
I don't think it's necessarily just that, Drew. I think he's just been a third pairing defenseman, and it so happens that Logan Stanley is coming in for whoever was previously playing with DeMello, right? So you've seen DeMello on the top pair as well. I'm just saying that, you know,
nobody believes that Tucker Poolman is a better defenseman than Dylan DeMello. I mean, I can't believe somebody believes that. That would be hard for me to imagine. That's why, I mean, I think Paul Maurice is trying to sort of say, look, he's got three or four defensemen he's got confidence in, and rather than playing those four all together, he's spreading them out a little bit among the entirety of his D pairs, which is why, you know, he's got confidence in Morrissey, so Morrissey gets Poolman. He's got confidence in DeMello, so DeMello gets Stanley or Ben or whomever.
But I'm just saying, I don't think that Paul Maurice doesn't have confidence or the least amount of confidence in Logan Stanley, because why would he have depended on him this much? All I'm saying is that, yes, if you're ranking Jets defensemen, everybody knows what the rankings are most likely going to be. Pionk, Morrissey, DeMello, and then I guess Forbort and Poolman are going to be, you know, four or five or five, six or whatever. But, you know, nobody, again, we've talked about this so many times. I'm quite frankly getting sick of talking about, you know, Ville Heinola needs to come into the lineup, because it's obvious. It's so obvious. But the Jets have to be better defensively as a team. That's the takeaway here. So unless you see that, I don't think it matters who's on defense. I really don't. That's just my own opinion.
Well, you see, I understand. I agree that
the first goal was just as much Kyle Connor's fault as it was Neil Pionk's fault.
Yeah,
I don't care what anybody says.
Absolutely, the defense needs to be better as a whole. But this sort of, you know, when you're in the regular season, I can sort of understand why you spread out your defense a little bit thinner among the three pairs. When you come playoff time, I think you got to load up. I think you got to load up and take your four best defensemen, the four defensemen you have the most confidence in, and you play those guys. You know, they are your horses. They are your guys who are playing 25 to 30 minutes a night, because it's playoff time. And that's certainly, you know, when Duncan Keith was at his prime in Chicago, and I'm certainly not saying that any of the Jets defensemen are Duncan Keith, but when he was in his prime, when when Drew Doughty was in his prime, when, Chris Pronger before that, what was the common denominator? They played an absolute ton of minutes because it was playoff time. You weren't reining in your horses for any reason at that point in the season. So if you're the Jets coaching staff, if you're Paul Maurice, if you're Charlie Huddy, now is the time, the next five or six games is the time to determine who your four horses are on your defense and load up those pairings, because you're going to need them to play huge minutes come playoff time. You can't spread it out like he's been doing all season long. And I think it's been good that he was doing that in the regular season. But now, with the struggles the team is facing, Dave, and with the playoff six games away, you have to identify those players and say, I'm riding with you. You guys are my ride or die. And if we end up dying, so be it. At least I didn't keep you in the barn waiting for playoff games that never materialized.
Like those horse analogies right there.
Well, it is very fitting, again, with it being Derby Day. But Dave, chime in on my comment there if you think I'm out to lunch, or, I certainly won't be insulted because more than one person has told me that.
Well, we're approaching lunchtime in an hour. So, I mean, I don't want Ezzy raiding my kitchen. So let's not give him any ideas. But I think.
How much food do you have in that kitchen? You're not a guy who seems to cook very much. So how much food's in there?
Dave is pretty stocked up.
I've got some snacks. Ezzy
likes snacks.
As he does like snacks. Thankfully, he usually stops and gets some before he comes. So that's usually, I don't have to worry about seeing a little trail of food from the kitchen to Ezzy's spot. But yeah, there's usually just food under the table, which I clean up after Ez, but it's all good. I think Drew, the point is that we talked about it. Don't burn out your guys in the regular season. Get that evenness, because you didn't want what were we seeing that first week? Mark Scheifele was playing like 26 minutes and it didn't make any sense. You don't need these guys playing significant minutes in that regard, because you're going to blow them out, especially in a condensed schedule, earlier than you need to. But now it's the playoffs and you got to ride your best. And this is when you're going to have to be able to rely on it. And, if a guy has to play, if a Josh Morrissey has to play 27 minutes, then Josh Morrissey has to play 27 minutes. If Dylan DeMello has to play 27 minutes, then Dylan DeMello, those are the guys that you trust. Those are the guys that you have faith in. And look, you're right. The Jets don't have a Chris Pronger. The Jets don't have a Duncan Keith. They don't have that kind of defenseman who you're going to say can go out there and play, 35 minutes in the game, and you're going to have that confidence that he's going to be just as good in minute one as he is in minute 35. It's not. It's more of a committee thing with this Jets team. But the reality is, look, Neil Pionk has stepped up his game big time. And what you have as an opportunity, and this is what I think is so critical in these final six games, because you know what you've got. Like, it's not like you're like, oh, well, I got to figure out what I have with Josh Morrissey. Well, you know what you've got with him. You know what you have with Neil Pionk. You know what you have with Jordy Ben. I mean, I know you want to see it, quote, but I mean, seeing it on the left side doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but you know what you have in him. So to me, it's an opportunity here to, quote, fine tune your team, get them rolling a little bit, but also give those guys that opportunity. Like I said, the Ville Heinolas, give the Logan Stanleys, get them in there, let that rotation roll a little bit, and maybe give Derek Forbert a night off. Derek Forbert had a terrible game last game. So, again, nobody should have a guaranteed spot. If you don't play well, then your spot is not. Again, it gives people, that leads to complacency. If I don't have to think, hey, my job is on the line, if I don't have a good game, again, you don't want guys to play tight and scared hockey. But right now, there's a complacency, because it seems like the only guy who has to worry about, quote, leaving the rotation, and even that isn't so significant, is Jordy Ben. Well, If other guys have that worry that, hey, you know what, I'm not a guarantee. There's a young guy who's champing at the bit, another horse racing thought, to get into the lineup. Well, guess what? Maybe they play a little bit cleaner. Maybe they play a little bit better. Or here's a crazy notion. Maybe that rest on a guy like Derek Forbert, who dealt with injuries all of last season, maybe that does his body some good and he comes in fresh. That's all I'm saying. That to me was the whole thought process of the taxi squad. And I get that these guys are the highest level alpha competitors and they want to play every game, but sometimes you have to be the one, the voice of reason in the room, and the guy who makes the decision for them. You're the coach. The buck stops with you. Ultimately, their play, they don't determine who plays when, you do. So if you think that they need to peel back and stop, give some fresh legs in, then it's too bad. If they don't like it, then play better, but don't have a game like they did for, I think Forward was on for what, four of the goals against. I'm not blaming him for all of them, but it's not a good sign when you're on for four goals against.
And Dave, that's why Ville Heinola should not only play on Monday night, Heinola should be playing for the rest of these six games, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
No question. I mean, just to put him with Dylan DeMello for the next half a dozen games and see what you got. And maybe all of a sudden your top four come playoff time is Pionk and Morrissey and DeMelo and Heinola.
I agree with you 100%.
That's exactly
what you should be doing.
That way, because you know we know Paul Maurice has confidence in Morrissey and Pionk, despite Morrissey's struggles. And we know that Pionk has been very good since the Jets acquired him from New York in the Trouba trade. And you know that DeMelo it provides Maurice with a level of comfort. So put him with Heinola and see, you know, DeMelo's not going to be offensive, and we know that, and that's fine. So Heinola can be, you know, can be comfortable knowing that he's got a very defensively responsible D partner. And then whatever your third pairing is, you know, be it Ben and Poolman, be it Ben and Stasny, whatever combination, Stasny and Poolman, whatever Stanley, combination. Stanley. What I was saying, Stasny. I meant like Stanley,
Paul Stasny is a very versatile player, and he's a smart veteran. But I don't think defense is going to be added to his repertoire.
No, that would be thinking outside the box. Certainly at this point in time, go with two of those three players for your third line, and all of a sudden you can play your top four. For more than just 18 to 20 minutes a game. Those guys can really eat up your minutes. And Heinola will feel comfortable knowing he's got a very defensively responsible partner in Dylan DeMelo with him. And Maurice will be comfortable in playing Heinola because he has DeMelo with him. To me, that's what you have to do for the next six games. And all of a sudden, I didn't even mention Derek Forbort in there. So Forbort's also an option to be playing on that third pairing. And so maybe your third pairing is Forbort and Ben, because we know how Paul Maurice feels about veterans, or Forbort and Poolman. Whatever it might be, you have to get Heinola into this lineup. Playing him in a third line role with Poolman doesn't solve you anything. Put him with another talented player and see if all of a sudden you have found money that changes your defense and changes your team leading into the playoffs against the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Edmonton Oilers or whomever the Jets end up facing in the first round.
Hold that thought.
I want to take a break. We're going to come back with Daniel Fink, Manitoba Moose broadcast.
Positivity, finally, a little Moose talk.
Talk about the Moose winner. They've got points in their last eight games. They finished a 17-game homestand. They're playing some great hockey. We'll talk about the Manitoba Moose from now, probably through the end of the program. That's up next. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard!
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. I'm joined by Dave Minuk. I'm joined by Ezra Ginsberg. About to be joined momentarily. Oh, here he is. Let's bring him right into the program. Manitoba Moose broadcaster Daniel Fink joins us. Looks like he's live at the Iceplex, if I'm not mistaken. I assume the Moose are on the ice right now. Is that correct, Mr. Fink?
Right from Moose practice, gentlemen. A live look inside.
There you go. That is a can't ask for better access than that.
Dan, can you tell the boys no slap shots on the boards just for all the time that you're on with us?
Well, I mean, with glass that's in there, it's not half as loud, I don't think, because they usually have the tempered glass in, but with the move, they had to bring in the pro glass and the acrylic, so it's actually quieted the things down a lot more.
There you go. Obviously, Dan, we brought you on to talk about the Moose. They finished their 17-game homestand, which is just saying it sounds ridiculous, but nonetheless, this is a team playing some very good hockey as of late. They have points in eight straight games. I guess, what can you tell our audience? What's the biggest takeaway you can tell our audience about the Manitoba Moose play as of late?
Well, I guess the biggest thing is it hasn't changed all season. I mean, they're the same team whenever they hit the ice. No matter who's in the lineup, they play the same way every single night. I don't know if I've seen a team as consistent as this in a long time. I mean, they just go out, they work a little more, and they have a great time doing it. So when they get that little bit of extra infusion of skill from the Winnipeg Jets taxi squad, that goes a long way too. But when you look at this eight-game point streak, they've had those guys, they haven't had those guys, and it just stays consistent. And it's been a lot of fun to watch. It's been a lot of fun to be a part of. It's one of those seasons that I really wish I'd been in the room the whole season, because it's such a great group of guys. But and I know we say that every year, but yeah, this group is something else. And you know what, they've been rewarded.
Dan, I was joking with you earlier, but I have to say, I absolutely love the fact that there's hockey and we can hear sticks and pucks on the ice. It makes me want to, you know, put the tacks on and get out there and, you know, show these guys how horrible I am on the ice. But, you know, we have to talk about last Saturday and, you know, Eero Kamri becoming the all-time franchise leader in wins with 85. Passing Corey Schneider, who we obviously know was so good, you know, around 2008, 2009, 2010, when he was a member of the Moose. But just how great of a story is it, considering that, you know, Kamri was claimed off of waivers? You know, he's been on a bunch of different franchises, and you know, it just seemed right the way it happened, the shutout, and you know, it just was such a feel good story, you know, for Kamri and everything that he's been through over the last couple years.
I don't think we have enough time for me to go through it. I realize I'm the last guest of the show, but I could probably talk for the next 2 hours on just the road to get here. I mean, for Kamri, I mean, it goes all the way back to last season, right, guys? So he gets claimed off of waivers. That was a shocker. I remember that day very clearly. Just all of a sudden seeing, I think it was Elliot Friedman who had it up first and went, uh-oh. Of course, the Moose still had Mikhail Burden, but all of a sudden your probably best goalie tandem in the American Hockey League gets cut in half, and one of the leaders here in the dressing room is just gone all of a sudden. So obviously it went through quite the odyssey for him to eventually return after Christmas. And even then he played, I think it was 16 games, had actually one of the best stretches of his career for the Moose, lost, I think, 3 or 4 games, 1-0 in the last half of that season. He was playing lights out for the Moose. So, you know what? It was looking like, okay, it's an 83 on March 7th, and you're thinking, okay, he's going to tie this up and surpass Corey Schneider by the end of the season. Well, we all know what happened about 4 or 5 days later, and here we are a year and a bit later. And, yeah, it's then the taxi squad's a factor. Are we ever going to see Eric Comrie get in for another game after he ties the record? Well, finally that happens. He ends up getting in for 3 more, plays excellent, gets the record. And, I mean, even just for guys like Nelson Nogé to be there, he was on the taxi squad all season with Eric. He's been with Eric for all of Nogé's career and most of Comrie's. And there was just so many great storylines to come out with. And then, like you said, to get it done in a shutout effort, I mean, that just was the icing on the cake. And he's just such a great guy and such an important part of this team. He really has been arguably the face of the Moose franchise since the team came back to Manitoba, and for him to get that record, it's so well deserved. Because you think about kind of the early seasons with the Moose back in Winnipeg, and as well as Eric played. I mean, just the prospects weren't quite there yet, and the Moose were really, really young and struggled a little bit. So in theory, in some ways, you'd think that maybe he would have gotten this done a little earlier had he been on maybe some more better teams, we'll just say. But you know what? For him to get there, it's huge, and it couldn't happen to a better guy.
Daniel Fink is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Daniel is, of course, the Manitoba Moose play-by-play broadcaster. The Moose practicing, as you can see behind Dan there. And Dan, if you ever hear us just scream incoming, that means a puck is being rifled at your head as quickly as humanly possible. So just get down if that happens.
I got that netting back there. I heard plenty of complaints about that throughout the season from the AHL broadcasts, but that's why it's there. So.
You know, Dan, and you know, speaking of the AHL, I mean, what a testament to this group of guys, this Manitoba Moose team, knowing for the most part that it was expected there weren't going to be a playoffs. That word came down from the AHL officially this week. But, you know, and I've talked to Pascal Vincent and I've talked to you. It's just what a testament to these guys that they're still going out, and you can't tell there aren't going to be a playoffs. Like, this team competes every single minute of every single game as if they are going to the playoffs. And it's such a testament to guys who don't necessarily even know if they're going to get called up to be a black ace for the Jets, you know, when the playoffs come around in the NHL. You see an insight to these guys that most people don't. But what can you say? What can you speak to this group about that sort of impact? How they care about each other the way they've done it so far this year?
I thought it was really cool after the last game. Yona Luoto was one of the guys they brought up for media. And I'm not sure if it was you, Dave, who asked him kind of a similar question, but he was almost speechless. He didn't know how to put it into words in some ways. He said, we're just having so much fun. Pascal Vincent, anytime you ask him about this team, he just says, we have a lot of fun. And they're out there. They're playing for each other. They're a great group of guys. And when you have that kind of room, when you're that tight, you're going to find success because you don't need that extra little bit of a carrot to get to the playoffs and continue on. I mean, it's a little bit different sometimes in the American Hockey League. You don't really have a lot of guys on long-term contracts. Everybody has some sort of motivation, whether that's to catch the eyes of the Winnipeg Jets management to say, you know what, I'm here. I want to be on the Jets next season. Or there's a lot of guys on one-year contracts that have to earn their job for next season. So there's always, no matter what, that type of motivation towards the end of the season, regardless if you're heading to the playoffs or not. And then you add in just the added element that these guys just show up, they go to work, they have a blast doing it, and you see the results on the ice. And I maybe look at one or two games over the last 20-plus where they haven't brought their best and played to whatever they could do that night. I mean, you're going to have nights where the puck just doesn't go in for you, but you know, they just go out and they don't let it discourage them. If it doesn't go right one night, they come right back and they do it all over again.
Daniel Fink, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Manitoba Moose, practicing behind Daniel, the Moose heading out on the road after finishing a 17-game homestand. Dan, I look at this Moose team, and I look at the leading scorers, and of course, Cole Perfetti is certainly right up there, and we'll talk about Perfetti during this interview, but Nathan Todd and Jeff Mallett, just two great stories, two guys who are undrafted, who've sort of worked their way up through the professional hockey ranks. You know, what's so special, like, you know, the impact that both Nathan and Jeff have had on the Manitoba Moose team this year?
Yeah, I mean, anybody would have been forgiven for seeing those signings in the offseason and saying, okay, Nathan Todd, he played close to 20 games in the AHL, had one goal. There's a guy that's going to be a depth signing. You saw him a lot. You know what he is. You know, Jeff Mallott, he comes out of Cornell. He's got six goals in each of the last four seasons. Okay, another depth guy. Then they show up, and all of a sudden, they just don't stop scoring. I mean, Mallott has been ridiculously consistent throughout the year. I mean, I think he's done at most three or four games without scoring a goal, leads the team in goals. He's tied for the AHL rookie lead in goals as well. So a guy, again, who scored six goals each of the last four seasons in college, all of a sudden has 12 goals in his first season of pro hockey. And Nathan Todd, man, he just hit a different gear. You could see it from the moment camp started. He picked up a step. He looked a lot faster. He was harder into the play. And as a result, you just attack sacks on the forecheck. He's scoring the puck from goaltenders three or four times this season, twice turning it into goals, just getting on the forecheck, getting it quick. And then because he's been able to add that step and play the game at a higher pace, that natural skill that he has is going through a lot more. And it doesn't hurt that both of these guys got a lot more opportunity because of just how things were this season. And there's some of these guys that, through no fault of their own, might not have gotten quite the same look because you had to play with Christian Vesalainen and with David Gustafsson, and the Jets prospects needed their space, and maybe they're playing on the third or fourth line and don't get as much ice time, and it doesn't click for them. Well, they got the opportunity to play top 6 minutes, and they haven't really relinquished it because they've been sitting on the top line, whether it's been Steven Season, David Gustafsson in between them the rest of the season. Even Todd went about 8 or 9 games without recording a point, but he's still a very effective player for the Moose during that span. And he had such an early lead that he's still atop the leaderboard and then gets back hot again and, well, puts up back-to-back 3-assist games and gets rolling. So these guys, they're just the quintessential example of what can go right in the American Hockey League for guys that get that opportunity, they run with it. And now the sky's the limit for these guys. It'd be really interesting to see where they land next year.
Dan, speaking of sky's the limit, Drew mentioned Cole Perfetti, and he's obviously one of the great young players on the Moose that you know, Jets fans, you know, want to talk about. And, you know, we know he's been putting up great numbers and scoring key goals and factoring in on big goals. What stands out to you? Because, you know, you're getting a front row to call Perfetti, who, you know, everyone expects to have a really, you know, long career in the NHL. So what has stood out to you about Perfetti? Like, is it I imagine it's the skill, but like, what has it been? Because I imagine, you know, before the season started, you were expecting him to be this skilled and this talented.
Obviously, probably one of the biggest things that stands out to me is that he's probably a better speaker than any of us. He should probably be hosting this show rather than being talked about on it. Aside from being an absolutely elite interview, it's been a lot of fun to watch the development. Because you're not sure when a kid comes in, he's 19, January 1st birthday, so he's, as opposed to some of his counterparts, actually 19 once we got going. You're just not sure. And you get a young guy in, he's obviously not the biggest guy. How is he going to deal with playing a whole bunch of guys that are larger, the speed of the game? That was one of the first things he mentioned, even leading up to his first game, said, it's a lot faster out here, even in practice. So he's like, okay, buckle up, kid, because it's going to get faster. And you know what? He was an effective player for the Moose. He kind of played around the lineup, did his thing. Some nights you wouldn't really notice him too much. And then you get on the power play, you go, okay, there's Perfetti. And really, through the first kind of half of the season, almost all of his points came on the man advantage, and you could really see what he could do with that open ice. And when things maybe slowed down a little bit, just how he could find guys, he could move pucks to space, he finds those passing lanes that we don't even see when we're sitting way up in Bell MTS Place, and it could be really easy for us to see those passing lanes. And then a deal happened, and he didn't have a point in his first game of the month. And then he racked up a point in 7 straight games. Finally had that point streak end in the last game that the Moose played, the last game of the month. He put up 13 points in the month, led the team in scoring, tied for the American Hockey League rookie lead in scoring. He had 10 points coming into the month. So you see just how big that jump was in the month. And you notice that. Every time he's on the ice, he looks dangerous. Maybe there's a period of it. The consistency is there. Because early in the season, you kind of see him. You know, the game was online. You can tell when there's big game players because they hit a different level. Well, the next stage of development is finding that consistency. Well, we're seeing that consistency now. So, and obviously one of the tough things for young players to play now is stretching that consistency over 5 games and 10 games and 20 games and 30 games in a whole season. So it's been a lot of fun to watch that progression. I mean, you know, it's been a lot of fun to see some of the great goals that he's been able to put behind netminders and some of the great setups he's had as well. So it's been a lot of fun to watch him. And you know what? It's I don't know what the future holds for next season, but and going forward, of course. But it's been a privilege to watch that young man do his thing in the NHL this season.
Daniel Fink is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's live at Moose Practice, as you can definitely hear in the background, the pings and the glasses smashing with the pucks hitting off of it. It's nice to hear sort of the background noise of a hockey game live during an interview. Daniel, of course, is the Manitoba Moose
play-by-play broadcaster. It's great.
I hope it's not too loud, guys.
No, it's good. It's good. And people are going to be like, it's authentic, Dan. That's the key. And that's what we're bringing the people. They're getting the authentic what's happening at a Moose practice. So that's
and
not
it's
bad.
So, and it's so nice, Dave and Dan, that the Moose, you know, they weren't originally going to practice, but they decided, they knew you were coming on, and they just decided to practice and give us some background noise. I love it. So
this is where I hit the button reveal. It's all green screen. The speaker's just sitting off to my lap.
But you know what, like, again, this is kind of nice because fans haven't had access to be in a practice live all season long. So we're actually, because it's courtesy of you, are trying to think of that. So it's kind of a nice,
some exclusive illegal content right there.
This is something big. So, you know, Dan, one player we have to talk about because he's just been so good for the Manitoba Moose is 2017 Jets third rounder, Johnny Kovacevic. Such a high, intelligent kid and such a smart young man. On, you know, off the ice, you know, speaking of guys who are intelligent, can hold their own in an interview. That's a perfect description of Johnny Kovacevic. But on the ice, he has just been such, like, he's a right shot, 6'5", 220 pound plus defenseman. That sounds like something the Jets could use. Not necessarily right now. I'm not rushing him. I'm risk adverse in that regard. But, you know, talk about how good his game is. You know, a 38 minute game. I think he's what, 2 goals, 7 assists in his last 9 games. This guy has just, he's been leaned on by the coaching staff of this Manitoba Moose organization, and he's just he's thriving right now under all that responsibility, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Dave, you've been on the Johnny Kovacevic hype train with me for the last little while, so this is my time to go here. We're gonna talk out the rest of the show about Kovacevic because I think there's a lot of people maybe sleeping on this guy that should wake up a little because his season's been remarkable, really. I mean, he's a solid player for the Moose last season. I mean, he came in and was a very strong option on the back end. He has such a great zone of control because he moves reasonably well. He's got that long reach. He's good with his stick. His gap control is fantastic. But into this season, maybe a bit of a slower start for him than he would have liked. But man, when the month changed, I guess it was right around game 10 of the season where he started to really get rolling. And then get into March and April, and he was really, like you said, leaned on by the Moose. He's become a leader for this team. It's just his second season in the American Hockey League, but for a couple of weeks, he was the most experienced player the Moose had on their blue line due to injury. So, you know, they really looked to him, and we were talking earlier about Claude and Malott stepping up when opportunity was presented. Well, there was a very large opportunity for Johnny Kovacevic to step into, and he did exactly that. You mentioned the 38-minute game when he led the way to a Moose win, despite the team having only 5 defensemen in the lineup that night. He was absolutely dominant. And you're starting to see that anytime the play comes into this side of the ice, it just ends. And then it's going back the other way. One of the things that I think is underrated about a lot of players, and the more you watch, the more you see how valuable a guy that can just clear the zone is. I mean, especially on the penalty kill. When you get into trouble on your own end on the PK, obviously, bad things happen. But when the puck gets on to Johnny Kovacevic's stick on the PK, it's down the ice. And I notice it when it doesn't get down the ice because it's so rare. And it seems like a small thing to mention, but it's so important. And now what he's really done this season, and we were talking to Eric Dubois about this earlier on in the month, is he worked on his passing in the offseason. He went long offseason to get that work in. And you know what? He's firing pucks from his own zone. His first pass is crisp. It's on the tape. It's hard. And now he's using his feet a little bit more. He's got that extra little bit of confidence. And we saw him set up a goal for Bobby Lynch in the last game, and he made a little stutter step at the blue line, cut over to the right side, and then fed pushing right to right in the slot with a perfect pass to start the play. And when that confidence gets going for a guy, it's so important, especially when they're developing, and now we're seeing him really push the pace, and he's been a lot of fun to watch over the last run of games, and he's just been so important for the Moose back end.
Last question for you, Dan. Dan Fink, Manitoba Moose broadcaster, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Another defenseman who's really sort of stepping up and making an impact in his first year as a professional, Declan Chisholm. You know, what has been the sort of the best attributes of his game as he makes the transition from Peterborough Pete to a Manitoba Moose defenseman?
It's always interesting to see where a prolific defenseman comes from in junior, whether they're going to be able to translate that offense to the AHL or pro hockey in general. And sometimes it takes guys a little while for that. And in the first game, he scored his first goal. So you look at what he's done throughout the season. He leads the Moose defense in scoring. Now Kovacevic is right hot on his heels. And he moves his feet so well. And that's going to be his assets, his best assets, probably throughout his professional career. And he thinks the game really well. So while he's not the biggest guy, he's not going to be running guys off pucks like a Dylan Sambor or a Johnny Kovacevic. He's got to get around them. He's got to slip into those spots, lift the stick, pull the puck away, and that's what he does really well. I'm constantly impressed by how well he does that despite not having that extra little bit of size. And he'll get right in there. He's not going to shy away from the play either. And, of course, his offensive acumen is impressive. It's not too often that rookies get to spend time on the first unit power play, but that's the opportunity they've had this season. It's kind of been the buzzword of this interview, guys. Opportunity and guys running with it. So he's taken that opportunity. He's made good on it. And he's had a pretty solid rookie season.
Daniel Fink is the Manitoba Moose broadcaster. The Moose finished a 17-game homestand. They've got points in 8 straight games. They head out on the road for the remainder of the season. Dan, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Appreciate you not getting pegged off with a puck in the back of the head as well. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for the time. I'm going to slip in a couple of shameless plugs here. The Moose is going to be on the road for 7 straight. You can catch all those games on cjob.com/sports or moosehockey.com/listen live. And, of course, AHLTV.com. And we're talking about what a great guy Eric Comrie is. I've got a very large ode to Eric Comrie coming out from the American Hockey League, probably around May 5th. I think that'll hit. So it's going to be a good, big, long read. I had a chance to talk to a lot of people, including former teammates and people throughout the organization. So really excited for that to hit the web as well. So, again, thanks, guys, for having me on.
Awesome
care,
work,
Dan.
Cheers. Thanks so much. There he goes, Dan Fink joining us on the show, Manitoba Moose broadcast.
Now that's authentic.
Live.
You're not going to get that.
I think I was going to say, I think we should have more, you know, beat writers and broadcasters, you know, coming to us with that type of.
I think Paulie's
you know,
audio step
sound
up his
that
game.
Was awesome. Yeah,
Paulie's got you know, Paulie. Paulie, we don't want you in an office in your house. We need you at the rink.
Yeah. No, we want pucks hitting the glass.
Yeah, anybody can do an interview from their house. Yeah, that's
but
not
it's true
exciting.
Though, right? I mean, if you think about it, that's a view that people haven't. Fans have had the opportunity to go to the Iceplex, watch the Jets practice, watch the Moose practice. And now, even if you go to the Iceplex, if you're playing, there's a big curtain that kind of blocks off the Moose section from everyone else. So it's a view that few are afforded. Yet, when you come on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to watch the three of us bozos talk to Dan, then you get that opportunity to watch something you haven't watched all season, which is the Moose practicing, firing pucks at the net. And a pretty good Moose team that seems to be firing on all cylinders right now.
Bozos is the best way to put us. Let's wrap up this episode of Bozos talking about what to expect for Monday night for the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, sorry, I'm just thinking, I was thinking of the episode of Seinfeld when the clown hasn't heard of Bozo. You guys know which one?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, where George is incredible. Sure,
isn't that the same episode where he eats something out of the garbage? Which, for the record, is something I could see Ezzy doing right now in my house.
Well, maybe more so in my 20s when I was a little bit desperate, but.
It's actually not the same episode, Dave. That's a little embarrassing. I'm a little embarrassed for you. It's not the same episode. I believe the Bozo the Clown episode is where the apartment's on fire.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And George knocks over the children to get out the door before the children do.
I think he still eats the. I think he eats the dainty. No. Isn't that where he takes the dainty out of the garbage?
Different episode because I believe really? I believe in that episode Dainty. isn't she having a tea? Isn't he at his girlfriend's house and she's having a tea or something? Mm. And the mother-in-law or the potential mother-in-law walks in and sees him eating out of the garbage.
Yeah, you're right. Damn it.
Thank you.
I hate to admit you're right. Especially
I know Seinfeld was the show about nothing, but
yeah, this is a show about nothing. Dear mama.
Alrighty, so what do you want to see from the Jets entering Monday night's game against the Ottawa Senators? Lineup changes, I think, are well, they have to be assured because if they're not, if it's the same lineup on Monday, I think people will be apoplectic at the very least. I think that's the most polite way of putting it. And this is a team that's obviously in desperate need of some changes. You know, they just need some changes.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. I we talked about this earlier in the show. I agree with you. Like, I think Logan Stanley or Ville Heinola goes in for Jordy Benn, or maybe we see both of these guys go in, and then maybe, you know, you see a Tucker Pullman or a Derek Forbert come into the lineup. We'll wait and see. But I would be shocked, put it that way, if we don't see any changes. The big one as well, guys, we talked about it earlier, Adam Lowry might play on Monday night. And if he doesn't play on Monday, he probably will play against Calgary. So that's obviously a big change. But you know, we're not going to throw any more cliches out here, full 60 minutes, everything like that. I mean, the Jets have to leave it out on the ice. I remember Dave said this, you know, going into the last game of the homestand against Edmonton. He said, you know, after four losses in a row, you have to leave it out there. You have to leave it all out there, I should say, against Edmonton. And they did play well coming off of that 6-1 loss. They didn't win the game, but it was a much better effort. And I think that's what you need to see Monday night against Ottawa. You have to end this losing streak. You have to do whatever it takes. Every guy on this Jets team should feel the desperation and the urgency in their game. So that's what I want to see. I want to see one of the best efforts that we've seen from this Jets team all season long.
Dave, final thought to you on the Winnipeg Jets entering Monday, trying to eliminate the 6-game losing streak.
Well, I mean, look, and as he just touched on the lineup changes that you're expecting to see, and I think you just need to see a team that took advantage of today's day off. You know, you got away from the rink, you had an opportunity to kind of hit that reset button, get out that vitamin D and just, you know, be out in the sun. I don't know what the weather's like in Ottawa right now, but let's go on the premise that it's, I was talking to my niece who lives there. I think it was a little rainy actually the other day, but maybe they're away from the rink. They're not thinking about hockey right now. And tomorrow you have to have a good practice. You have to be engaged. I mean, and that to me is the key. If you play a game, that Edmonton game was a much better game, right? You lost because you gave up two power play goals and an empty net goal. So your 5-on-5 was relatively decent. And then you don't follow that up against obviously the Montreal team that dominated you in pretty much all aspects of the game. So if you're going to flip it around, again, one game isn't going to suddenly relieve all the pressure, but it could go a long way to allowing you to, you know, open up the valve and allow a little of that pressure out, because you're not out of the woods. A win doesn't suddenly say, okay, fine, we got it back. You know, yeah. You know, the Jets have their groove back. It's not that easy for this team because, you know, what you've done over the last few weeks you have to have a long list of accomplishments in order to kind of get away from that. But you can start on that path forward by doing what we're talking about, which is having a more Edmonton-like effort than a Montreal effort. And again, Adam Lowry, I think, will go a long way when he is inserted. Again, Paul Maurice tipped his hand a little bit, talking about how he expects him to be back. And I just think, like, you just need to see that collective buy-in again with the new faces in the lineup and the effort. Minimize your penalties. Be a little quicker on a little crispier with your passing. You take advantage of what you have, which is an opportunity with a day off today and a good practice on Sunday to be ready on Monday to go. And then again, finish this off. You got to have a good effort against Calgary. Again, I'm not looking past Ottawa because I think it's critical they play well in Ottawa, but you got to play well against Calgary as well. Like, you have to turn it around, and it's not on one player. Like, again, we've talked about it. You asked which player is going to be most responsible maybe for getting this going again, but this is a total team effort. This is Connor Hellebuck. This is Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, all the way down to the Jansen Harkins, the Nate Thompsons, the Trevor Lewises, who we think are doing their part. But this is going to be a total team effort, not just one guy turning it around for this Winnipeg Jets club.
And on that note, we thank everybody for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I want to pay tribute to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Reminder, Monday night, right around 8:30 or so, that'll be when the post-game show starts. The Jets, obviously, and the Senators, the Jets trying to finish off and end their 6-game losing streak, get back on the winning side of the ledger. Then again, Wednesday night with the post game show, that one will be a little bit later, right around probably 11 o'clock at night on Wednesday, as the Jets are into Calgary for a later start time. Dave Minuk has his head on fire. Ezra Ginsberg might not have a beard or shouldn't have a beard come Monday night. Smash the subscribe button.
And by the way, tell everybody to go enjoy. It's going to be a gorgeous day in Manitoba, +22 in Winnipeg. I expect the rest of the province will be beautiful. So hopefully you enjoy you too get some vitamin D and enjoy this beautiful Saturday in Winnipeg.
Exactly right. I'm off to head to the park and catch up with my family after they've bailed out on me a couple hours ago. So I'm off to do that. I hope everybody enjoys their Saturday. And a reminder, Monday night, we'll see you for the post-game show. But until then, we thank you for watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And we remind you, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.